Hi, I'm Fred Schonenberg, and thank you for joining me on the Venture Fuel podcast. At Venture Fuel, we help companies find new solutions by partnering with the best startups from around the world. On the show, you'll learn the secrets of business leaders who tap into startups and the founders driving extraordinary results. We'll consider new ideas, stretch our mindsets beyond the status quo, and in the process, discover how to leap the competition and fuel personal growth.
Hey everyone, I'm Fred Schonenberg. I'm the founder of Venture Fuel. Thanks so much for joining us today for our What's Next Now event series. Today we're going to focus on the future of grocery. We have two amazing panels which combined great startups, very savvy investors in the space, both from different perspectives, hopefully giving you some insights you can't get anywhere else on how grocery is evolving. I thought I'd take just a minute here before we get started, tell you a little background about why we're doing this and what Venture Fuel does, and then we'll dive right into both of our panels. So the reason the event series is called What's Next Now is when I founded Venture Fuel almost 8 years ago, there was the McKinsey Three Horizons of Innovation. It was very popular and is still to this day very popular at business schools and large companies. And the idea is that there are three main horizons: now, new, and next. And each one represents something different in terms of the market. So now being the existing market that you're fighting in, new being emerging markets, and then next are those future markets. The sort of graph came out in 2000. And in the past 20 years, we believe that that has evolved pretty rapidly. The pace of acceleration and convergence of technologies has meant that now has become next. And so that if, as a large industry leading company, if you are not looking at future technologies, you run the risk of being disrupted. You also miss out on some opportunities for growth and efficiencies. And so that's really why I started Venture Fuel. We've been fortunate to partner with a number of industry leading companies across, obviously we're talking about grocery today, so we're very heavily working in the spaces of food and beverage, and you can see some of the companies here. But we always are looking for folks that want to push the envelope and are thinking, how do they take their existing resource and partner with external startups and new technologies? And we help them create a repeatable innovation process to do that through our global innovation network, which is venture capitalists, university labs, incubators, and accelerators all around the world. So we find the best of what's next and help partner with these industry-leading companies. The reason why people do this is a few things. External innovation means faster timelines, lower risk, and greater proximity to the consumer. So that is why those companies come to us and how we're able to help. So one of the things I want to talk about before we get started here is, if you think of next now and industries that are changing or being affected by the advance of technology, I can't think of a category being impacted more than grocery. If you think about sort of the hybrid consumer, the fact that brick and mortar is still king in the space, but the acceleration of e-commerce and the challenges that creates, where you need to have an omni-channel strategy. If you're a traditional brick and mortar, now you need to be able to have a delivery option, an e-commerce option. And if you're a traditional e-commerce player, then now you need some sort of brick and mortar. So that creates all sorts of challenges, as you from the grocery community that are on know, in terms of logistics, in terms of supply chain, both of which have been incredibly disrupted this past year. And then if you think of out of stocks, these things are all happening because the consumer is less loyal than they once were. They expect automation. They demand convenience. And if they don't get it, they have other options to go somewhere else. And so this is creating a lot of opportunity and a lot of challenges within the grocery industry. And we have two all-star panels today to talk about that, go through sort of some of the advantages of automation, how technology can help you better serve your consumers, and what's next within this industry. We also wanted to highlight a few startups up front here that we think are interesting beyond the ones speaking today, and gives you an idea of how we're thinking about this space. Tally 3.0, this is the idea of autonomous inventory tracking, using robots, using AI and machine learning. There's a whole bunch of different versions of this. We had a conversation earlier this year with Pensa Technologies that uses drones for out of stocks. Later on, Clerks CEO will be on. They have a solution in this space. And again, the idea is, how do you take something that's table stakes for consumers, which is needing the products on shelf and locking it into that logistics and supply chain efficiently. What's old sometimes is new again. It's very interesting to me that as the innovation person, I'm talking about the milkman model. This is Milk Run, very cool concept. It's sort of the farm to fridge, where if you're looking for local eggs, meat, dairy, from local farmers, instead of just going to the farmer's market, actually having it delivered to you and creating a subscription model off of it. So there is some new modeling and business ideas there, but that's also something that we're seeing. And this also has the undercurrent of a sustainability play. Foodstorm kiosks, there's several players in this space too, but the idea when you walk into a grocery store that you can look at a kiosk and it can recognize your face or your thumbprint, or you can type in a code and all of a sudden the food that you like, your gluten allergy is all automated in there and you can get a shopping list off of that or have food prepared for you on the spot. All that is evolving both using kiosks as well as your mobile phone and this idea of the hybrid model when you're online, bringing that identity into the real store. And obviously Amazon Go is playing with several of these as well. So, but again, removing friction for the consumer, helping to be more personalized for them is a very hot area. Delivery startups, we joked when we were putting together this slide, we could insert 30 to 40 different startups. Getter has been getting a tremendous amount of press lately, so we went with them. But the idea of groceries within 10 minutes, which if you remember, 15 years ago, seemed like a good idea with Webvan and was not. Today, there's been a lot that has changed, whether that is the adoption of technology via the pandemic or just the logistical tech that's out there. And so this is becoming table stakes. You need to be able to get the produce to your consumers immediately into their homes. Digital food assistance, there's a lot in this space as well. Looking at personalized dietary restrictions, if somebody's lactose intolerant, all of a sudden being able to look at a menu just for them and fill their shopping cart accordingly. And then on the back end, what's interesting about Green Choice is that it is plugged in to a number of very large retailers so that they're sourcing sort of the best of what's there. And so it's a new revenue stream potentially for those retailers, even though it sits on top of their normal e-commerce. And the last startup I'll mention before we get to the main event here, Ox Fulfillment Solutions. This is using smart glasses, right? The idea of using tech to optimize human performance, using the glasses essentially, and figuring out how to pick for each order in the warehouse, the most efficient route to get what you need, filling the carton, making sure you realize what mistakes are made and things like that. There's all sorts of versions of this sort of wearable optimization tech that's out there. So just a few of the things that we're looking at Venture Fuel. We're always looking for what's next now for our clients. And within the setting, there's a button to click. If you'd like to schedule a meeting with us, we would love to talk to you about how we might be able to be helpful. But without further ado, what I'd love to do is pass you over to Vanessa Rosato on my team. She's going to host the first panel, and I'll be back for the second panel. So thank you very much for joining us, and we will talk more soon.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to What's Next Now, the Future of Grocery. It's my pleasure to introduce the first panel, Food Innovation and the Modern Supply Chain. I'd like to welcome our two panelists. Our first guest is Brandon Hill, CEO and founder, co-founder of Vori. Vori is the operating system for the grocery industry. It can help reduce inventory reordering time by 80%. And Brandon Hill has a great founding story. I'm going to ask Brandon actually to share some of it with us. But he and his founding team started Vori in 2019 and launched their first product at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. Since then, Vori has grown to serve 90% of Northern California's natural and independent grocers and is rapidly expanding across the U.S., starting with the West Coast. Welcome, Brandon.
Thank you, Vanessa. Pleasure to be here.
And as I said on our prep call, Brandon, I love that you're always on brand. You've got your Vori hat on. Very good. Lauren, I'd like to welcome Lauren. Lauren Ebb is the founder and CEO of Branch Food, the largest community of food entrepreneurs and startups in Poland, and the co-founder at Branch Venture Group, an angel network for investment in early stage food startups. Prior to Branch Food, Lauren consulted for food tech businesses in Boston and San Francisco and worked as an analyst for Salt Venture Partners, a venture capital firm focused on food startups, targeting content, commerce, and technology, and wrote reports on international food safety development initiatives on behalf of the Agricultural and Commodities Division at the World Trade Organization in Geneva, Switzerland. Warren has a master's in food policy and applied nutrition from the Jeffs Friedman School of Nutrition Science and Policy, and a bachelor of science degree in nutrition and food science from the University of Vermont. Welcome, Warren.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
You know, when we do What's Next Now, we like to bring together a community of brands, startups, and investors. And when we have entrepreneurs on, we love to ask them to just share with them, you know, what their company is. So, Brandon, I'd like to start with you. Who is Vori? What is Vori? And why did you and your co-founder decide to launch it?
Absolutely. Well, with Vori, we like to say that we're transforming the grocery replenishment process by allowing a store buyer or a department manager or an order clerk to walk their aisles once and reorder from all 100, 200, 500 vendors that they might be working with a simple mobile application that's very user-friendly and is multi-vendor in many ways. So some people like to describe it as, you know, the UNFI app, but for all small direct vendors. Some people like to describe it as the B2B Instacart, but it's just a simple way to put all your suppliers in one place if you're a retailer and prevent out of stocks and reduce the overhead of working with a lot of small vendors in order to maintain that product assortment that your customers love. And it is an interesting story. My parents were in the grocery industry. They've been in it for the past 40 plus years. They actually met and fell in love at Price Chopper in upstate New York, the headquarters, and relocated ultimately to Minneapolis, Minnesota, which we know is a food and retail and CPG hub, where I was born and my sisters were born. But in all their work, they noticed just the vast inefficiencies in dealing with reorders because they were working for the big CPG companies, Kraft Heinz, Reynolds Consumer Products, and more. And they approached my co-founders and I and said, hey, there's this big problem of procurement and ordering. Can we use technology to help solve it? And we ended up creating this system in partnership with some of our local grocery stores. It started with just a couple grocery stores in Northern California, the market at Edgewood in Palo Alto, DeLucchi's Market in Redwood City, and has now grown to several hundred retailers on the West Coast. And it's really exciting times, especially when you look at billions of dollars of food being procured on pink, yellow, and blue sheets of matrix printer paper.
I was going to ask you that. I mean, from my research prepping for today, a lot of this at the local independent level was still being done on pen and paper, much in a similar way it was done when your parents met 40 years ago. So how are grocers receptive, or what's the reaction when you come in and talk to them about the digitization of this process and making it basically like a mobile, you know, one-stop shop?
Yeah, you do have three types of individuals. Obviously, you have some people who are not ready and they're very happy with the old school way, and that's fine. But you have two other interesting classes of people. People who are, hey, I've been looking for a solution like this for the past 15 years. You know, I come from Whole Foods where they have this, but now I'm working at the local independent. It's a 5-store chain or a 7-store chain, and we're still doing things off clipboard. Thank you so much for bringing this. I've been talking about this for a long time. And then you also have another interesting class of, you know, buyer or store director or owner, very skeptical in the beginning. And then we show them the technology and we have them write a sample order for one of their vendors. And they say, oh, wow, I take it all back. This is definitely magical. It's definitely warming people up to technology and showing them what it can do is always an interesting journey. But we've tried to make it very approachable and user-friendly. And the fact that we come from grocery, this is a buy us for us company, it makes it a little bit easier.
Warren, shifting to you, I mean, we talk about this, we talk about making an offering for independent local grocer. We see a lot of technology. Fred walked us through some of the startups and innovations and the applications of obviously different technology that's been accelerating in the last, particularly in the last year and a half with COVID. But as an investor, when you look across the marketplace, what gaps do you see? And how do you think there are opportunities for entrepreneurs to close those?
Yeah, no, thank you for the question. I think it's a great one. You know, I think that there's always opportunity for innovation and new and better ways of doing things. And I think the technological transformation that every industry has been experiencing, particularly in the last 10 years, has really left no stone unturned. And that's particularly true for grocery. Entrepreneurs and technologists, you know, are rethinking every aspect of the experience. And we're seeing this transformation really take place right before our eyes. You know, you go into stores today and anything static is becoming digitized, whether it be shelf prices, in-store food service menus, directional banners. with that, there's a lot of data that can be captured and used to better optimize or streamline processes and provide customers what they're looking for. Automation in the back of the house, you know, related to picking and packing is coming in, particularly for larger retailers. Self-checkout is starting to take over a greater footprint of, you know, the end transaction. And even what's happening outside of the store, you know, related to what we saw, you know, a tremendous uptake of companies like Instacart over the course of the pandemic are influencing organization in store and are actually changing how products are placed, where they're placed, and who we're shopping with, right? We're now shopping with not just other consumers, but people that work for those companies. And so, you know, in terms of gaps and opportunities, you know, as investors, we look for the same things that entrepreneurs should be looking for, really. You know, we look for companies and opportunities that have the potential to define a category and are being built by a great team in a growing market. And it's the size of that market that they hope to serve, you know, that's big enough to grow a robust business within. And in grocery, you know, while so many new products, technology and services can be created, you know, one major consideration that we always think about in this space is who is the payer? Who is paying for this new product, this new technology, this new service? Traditionally, you know, retailers, companies don't actually make all that much money. We had a representative from a major US retail chain speak at our annual conference, Food Edge, a couple of years ago, who said, for every $1 that they sell, they make one penny of that transaction. And so, you know, any companies coming to market that I think are helping grocers reduce their own costs or help them sell more will, I think, ultimately, you know, be the ones that they pay special attention to. You have to be solving a problem in today's market. You know, there's no room for nice to haves. It has to be a need to have, especially with such a high volume operation like a grocery store and you know, retail chains.
It's fascinating, right? Because by some estimates, grocery is a $650 billion industry. However, it has extraordinarily low margins. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the new players coming in are upcharging for the type of convenience that they're offering, like these delivery and courier services. But the question is, at what point is a consumer willing to pay? And how much are they willing to pay for that type of convenience? Brendan, what do you see as the greatest opportunity for grocery retail now in terms of technology and innovation as you talk to retailers who are either, you know, implementing Vori or service, or who are, once they have implemented and scaled it, who are looking for other areas where they can find efficiencies, find opportunity?
Really, I think that with all of this innovation that's happening in the front of the house, the Instacarts, the DoorDash, all the grocery delivery services, and all of the consumer-facing in-store technologies, there's a huge opportunity in the back of the house for a lot of these chains. Retailers of all sizes, in fact, can optimize things like procurement, invoicing, accounting, payroll. And it's an incredible, it's a dizzying amount of manual paper laid in, hard scrabble work that is actually error prone that could benefit from streamlining and automation, some of which Vori does today, some of which, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for retailers to kind of fix. So you think about the process of receiving, right? And the 6-20% of, you know, orders that come in that need credits that go unclaimed, you know, from vendors. You go and you think about out of stocks, right? Not being able to find the products that you need for your customers from your primary vendors that you need, you actually don't have visibility into the supply chain to figure out where to get it. You need this Dannon yogurt and your primary vendor doesn't have it. Well, where else can you get it from? With technology, you can find where to get that yogurt and make sure it gets to the shelf and prevent that hole from happening and retain that customer and capture that dollar. And, you know, when you add up the sum total of all of this work, the lost invoices, late payments, there's actually billions and billions of dollars that actually can be returned back to these small and medium-sized businesses. And even large retailers deal with this as well. And I think that the back of house and the supply chain and bringing efficiencies there actually makes it so that we're not, when I say we members of the supply chain, we're not competing against each other. It's actually, we're competing against out of stocks. We're competing against inefficiency. We're competing against bad experiences for our consumers, for our customers. And the pie actually grows when we can modernize the supply chain and bring it onto kind of like a singular kind of system. So that's where I see a lot of opportunity.
One last question, Brendan, for you actually just came from the crowd. Based on Lauren's point, and we talk about the challenges for retailers to pay given the tight margins, what is your selling for a retailer? You know, how do you talk to them about investing in the back end and efficiency? You talked a little bit about it just now, but what kind of a return on investment are you seeing with the implementation of a system like Vori's?
Great. Well, I can talk about this from the retailer's perspective. There's at least two really key value props today. You know, one, for those who are familiar with the manual reorder process, it's very grueling. You're sending faxes, dozens of faxes or, you know, dozens of phone calls every week to your dairy vendor, to your health and wellness vendors, to your all these different suppliers. With Vori's technology, we cut that down by up to 80% by allowing you to shoot the order by scanning shelf tags, entering in a quantity and submitting that order and those orders plural to all of your different vendors in one go. And so essentially that's like doubling the horsepower of your workforce. Everybody, it's not a secret that hiring and, you know, the labor shortage, so to speak, in retail, everybody's trying to find new employees and it's kind of hard. But with technology like this, you actually can increase the horsepower of your existing workforce and save time. So now what do you do with that save time? If you're not spending it reordering, now you can do customer service. Now you can help people find that high margin bottle of vitamins or keeping the products faced and merchandised properly, or even finding new products to bring into your store. The second value prop is cutting out of stocks. So we're talking to retailers who have anywhere on a good day, 8 to 10% out, right? But on a bad day, up to 20, 25%. And in various categories, it can vary. What if you could move that needle by a fraction? That's revenue returned back, sales returned back to the business and happiness, increasing your customer satisfaction. So that's kind of the sell for Vori, is you make money and then we win when you win.
And what, because I assume the consumer behavior there is they leave, if they can't find what they're shopping for, they go home or they just don't buy it. They buy the rest of their basket and your average basket size goes down. Lauren, when you are talking to entrepreneurs who are, you know, they have a product, but they are trying to actually get that first demonstration of application and commercial viability, how do you talk to them about finding retailers? I mean, Brendan, you told your story, you know, finding local retail, it was a for us, by us. So you got buy-in, you were able to demonstrate the application of Vori. But Lauren, what advice do you have to entrepreneurs who want to experiment and not experiment, they want to convince a prospective client to take a chance on them and to test their technology or their product? Because you also, in your portfolio, you have some great innovative products, food products as well, in addition to technology applications.
And so I think the retail environment, you know, whether we're talking about buyers or people that manage operations in the back of the establishment or people that are responsible for putting together the circulars with, you know, the discounts and promotions, I mean, it is a place for transactions to take place. And so they've, you know, in our experience in working with entrepreneurs that are providing new technology or services for these establishments have been, you know, very interested to hear what they can do to improve their own processes and better engage with their customer base. So I think in most cases, they've been very receptive to kind of these new entrepreneurs and new products coming to market. I think that from an entrepreneur's perspective, you know, understanding what type of retailer they're creating their product for is really important. So, you know, there are small independent retailers, there are mid-sized chains, there are big box stores, there's national ones, there's regional ones. You know, what type of company are you really producing for, and what, you know, experience do they need to have in order for you to take that as a case study to other prospective customers to start getting that traction and usage of your product to show this actually does make a difference for this type of retailer. And we're, you know, potentially going to be working with now this type of retailer because we've gone through the process of working out the kinks and, you know, figuring out how this technology can scale. So yeah, I would say that they've been pretty much receptive, but, you know, I think it is very entrepreneur driven in terms of what type of customer they're looking to acquire and how persistent they are in working with that customer and really meeting their needs to help drive, I think, a lot of the efficiency that Brendan is talking about so that they can really realize the value of this new product.
And Lauren, we have a question for you from the crowd. You invest in a number of food startups It's a notoriously challenging space given the competition to get on shelf at grocery. How do you evaluate if a new food startup has what it takes to break through? How is it similar or different to how a grocery retailer will evaluate what to put on shelf? It's a little bit of a build on the last question that we just talked about, this more specifically about food products and how they can get that shelf space, which is so competitive.
Yeah, it is very competitive. However, I do think buyers in every category are always looking for products that will drive consumer interest and sales, right? Because again, it goes back to that, are you helping grocers sell more product? And they will bring in products, lots of different types of products, to see if customers will actually buy them. And so I think actually the direct consumer channel has been very interesting for this. We have a portfolio company that is expanding to new regions, selling specifically direct to consumer, and then using that customer traction as case studies for retailers to show, look at all the buyers in this region that want our product, put it on your shelf, you will get sales because they're familiar with our brand. I think that, you know, buyers too are looking for, you know, companies that can be category leaders. So as we think about other categories that exist where we haven't seen a lot of new product innovation or new brands coming to market that are capturing consumer trends of, you know, health, wellness, clean label, organic, you know, the non-GMO, all the different certifications that really drive a lot of customer purchase, identifying new products that have those attributes, we've seen buyers be very receptive of and willing to try. And so as you're thinking about, again, the businesses that you're launching and growing or the food product companies that you're refining for better, you know, kind of target market fit and better customer fit, just looking at the category that you're playing within, going to the grocery store, seeing the competitors, figuring out how your product is highly differentiated, I think will, you know, ultimately be a driver of buyers getting interested, excited, and wanting to bring you onto the shelf.
That's interesting. I spent 15 years in the beverage industry, and going to the grocery store is very important. You have to go, you have to see what's actually moving, you have to see what you're actually competing against. So thank you for sharing that. That's some great advice. I have another question from the crowd. They're curious about Vori's relationship with distributors. This is a question for Brandon. What you're doing, Brandon, with the aggregated order data, it seems like a gold mine of data for brands. And that's a quote from the question from the audience. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
I'd love to. This is a great question. Thank you, audience member, for that. It actually touches a little bit on some things that Lauren, you just said. First of all, with distributors, we definitely take privacy and security very seriously for our distributor partners and their data. But we partner very actively with distributors. And that's what makes us unique. We are a two-sided platform. So we have the retail side on one end, and then we have the distributor and really, and also direct brands on the other side, right, of the platform, and enable that trading relationship to be a lot more efficient. And so distributors get buy-in. They can run promotions to their existing and prospective customers on the Vori network. They can update their pricing and their catalog, show images so that in the app, when a retailer, when a buyer is looking for a new kombucha, it's all right there in the app. So we work closely with them and help grow their average order size by up to 15%. And that's what they see as the opportunity and why they partner with us. As far as the aggregated order data, right now we do see order patterns and things like that. And what we ultimately want to be able to do is any data that we have in a safe and secure way empower everybody. So how can we use the data to empower retailers to order smarter and suggest proper orders so that they don't have shrink or out of stocks? How can you use the data to help distributors identify voids and items that have fallen off the shelf and then put those items back on the shelf or increase their shelf space, right? And then as far as brands, to the point that Lauren made about DTC, well, if they're going through, say they're selling products to independents and Vori has a picture of what that sell-through looks like and what that order data looks like, they can take that information to when they go and present to a larger regional or national distributor or breaking into the larger retailers themselves directly. So, you know, data is everybody's friend. And that's when my mom was pregnant with me, she worked at Nielsen and was really focused on this exact thing. And it's like, how can we take some of that democratization of data and help everybody, brokers, manufacturers, distributors, direct brands, brands and distribution, retailers, and everybody in between.
Awesome. We're actually at time for the panel, but I'd like to ask you each in sort of a sentence, if it's possible, as you look ahead to the next 3, 5, 10 years, what do you think the food industry is going to look like? So now that's a tough one, but in a word, in a sentence, where do you see it going?
You know, I would argue that 10, 15 years ago, you know, is really when we started seeing change take place, you know, in part due to the release of really influential media pieces like Forks Over Knives. Some of you may remember Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma, the Super Size Me documentary. You know, those pieces had a lot of influence over consumers who really started to question the health of their diet. You know, what does free range mean? What do all of these certifications mean? And really started to question where their food was coming from. So, you know, that was 10 to 15 years ago. Fast forward to today and looking at 2020, you know, $26 billion was invested in agri-food tech. We have a new word, agri-food tech, which refers to the collective of startups with a mission to disrupt the global food and agriculture industry. So, you know, I think the industry is under tremendous pressure to be more sustainable, environmentally friendly, produce products that contribute to better health outcomes. But as we've talked about today, you know, change is underway. Major CPG companies are taking a more active interest in farmland. Product packaging is moving from plastic to paper. We're seeing more bulk purchasing happening. And I think this change will only accelerate, you know, the ability of technology to come in, you know, drive these efficiencies as Vori is doing, you know, bring better products to market that are better for consumers, you know, blowout categories, you know, and have, you know, so many different options now within categories to better meet consumer needs. So, you know, as we think about the trends that are driving this change, personalization, customization, instant gratification, speed, I think those are the things that are defining the future of food in a lot of ways. And as entrepreneurs and retailers and stakeholders are trying to sort of navigate what to do next, looking to consumer trends is a really good window into what the future may hold.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Consumer first, always.
So in a sentence, we're witnessing a mass decentralization and democratization within food, very much so to Lauren's point. So if you look back, you know, a century or a little, you know, like half a century ago, it was like A&P, retailer, and a handful of CPG conglomerates, you know, your Campbell's, you have your various companies that were responsible for nourishment and food in the United States. And now today, there is no A&P. There's a huge rise in the $120 billion specialty food category where there's an ever fragmentation, like there's new brands popping up all the time. There's even a multipolar world in food delivery. It's not just Instacart. Now everybody is coming out with their own food delivery service. So there's options upon options for the consumer, which creates fragmentation every layer down in the supply chain. And you're going to see vertical farms as a new solution, right, to produce. You're going to see the rise of plant-based alternatives to meat and to dairy. There's just so many new things happening, and it's only going to continue to spiral. So the question is, with every new node added to the mass, the trade graph within the supply chain, to be able to service the diverse taste of the consumer, how do we manage that complexity and how do we make it efficient and sustainable for everybody? And that's where I think we're going to see the next generation of connective tissue, right? The synapses linking all of these different the consumer all the way down to the farm. There's going to be tech software is going to link that whole pathway. And I'm excited to see what it looks like.
Thank you both for your time today. And it's my pleasure now to return this back to Fred for the next panel.
Thanks, Vanessa. That was awesome. I would love to bring in Roger and Marlo, and we'll jump right into it. Guys, I'm going to embarrass you really quickly with your backgrounds, and then we'll dive in. So Marlo is the co-founder and CEO of Clerk. Clerk is a retail tech company that aims to build a better retail experience. Right now, initially, they're focusing on improving marketing and merchandising performance in the checkout aisle. But their long-term vision is to simplify how brands and retailers market and manage their products throughout the store. Their technology tracks out-of-stocks and product placements while also serving as a digital advertising network, which is better known as Grocery TV. And Roger Chen is a partner at Silverton Partners. So Roger's an investor and tech leader based out of Austin at Silverton, which is a leading venture capital firm with $400 million in committed capital and top-tier performance across 6 funds to date. So in his role, Roger has invested in numerous early-stage software and consumer companies in Austin and all across the U.S., and typically as the lead investor in the company's first institutional round. If I give you a list of everything Roger has led and invested in, we would use up all of our time, but just a couple that Roger has led and or sourced investments in Billy, which is all over the map in terms of PR. You see it everywhere. Apprentice, Copper Cow, Clerk, Enable My Child, Fetch, and we'll put all the others in his bio. So gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks, Fred.
Cool. So Marlo, let's start with you. Talk to us about Clerk, Grocery TV, and why you launched it, your founder story.
Yeah, so ironically, kind of similarities to our last panelist here. We actually started out of two brothers that had been in retail forever. One was actually from Minnesota, and they're the largest front-end fixture manufacturers in the U.S. So they make the racks that go in the checkout aisle that all the gum and candy goes on. And they've been in the industry for, gosh, 30 years. And they'd seen a lot of the kind of problems that we talked about in the last panel. So out of stocks, customer engagement, all these kind of challenges that retailers were facing every day. And they wanted to come up with a technological solution to those issues, but they didn't really know how to get started because that wasn't really their background. They were more just metal benders. They built these fixtures in stores. One of them went to his son, and who's actually a friend of mine from college. And basically the three of us, me and two other co-founders, we put together this business to basically build a solution to the issues they were experiencing. So Grocery TV, as you mentioned, it's a digital display that goes in the checkout aisle. The display basically goes right over the belt when you're checking out. It's about the size of an iPad. Retailers can do marketing on there so they can push their content out to every shopper that comes to the store during every visit. But then we also can monetize that space so brands can put content on there and help lift sales for their products, basically address the consumer engagement issue. And then in addition to that, the displays actually have cameras that can track out-of-stock products. So the front-end category manager can actually see, you know, I'm out of Snickers in lane two in this store, or a particular store is, you know, underperforming for whatever reason, and be able to flag that. So really kind of solves both the marketing and merchandising issues in that category of the store. What's fun about it, though, is that these are issues that are experienced throughout retail. The whole store has issues with out of stocks, has issues with marketing. And so we're really using that as just an entry point and starting to now take those technologies as capabilities to the rest of the store.
I love it. I was thinking when Brandon was talking about his mom working at Nielsen, yeah. I was thinking of one of the things about Grocery TV that's so interesting is not only can you use the cameras on the screen to look at out of stocks, but you're also using it for measurement, right? So to see how many people actually see the screen. So for an advertiser, somebody at Nielsen, that's a pretty big metric to be able to capture who actually is seeing the ads that go up.
Yeah, definitely trying to just take some little steps forward in terms of the analytics that we provide. You have to be obviously careful in this stuff because privacy is of the utmost importance in retail, especially just any kind of data privacy. But we've built some solutions that let us, you know, track, like you're saying, the number of impressions, like the number of people that are actually present for ads that are running without actually having to store any images of people. So basically doing that analysis on the device itself and then dumping any image data. But it's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, for marketers, it's kind of a first step to be able to see that kind of information.
That's awesome. And so Roger, when you were looking at Marlo and his team first, you know, obviously you do a tremendous amount of due diligence. What opportunity did you see within the grocery space and maybe particularly to Clerk?
Yeah, sure. So there's three broad innovation themes that I'm very interested in grocery. The first is stores getting powered and connected, whereas in the past, these were static aisles. The second is, you know, independent retailers that are very concerned with competing with Amazon and Walmart. Those being, you know, omnichannel now and access, having access to emerging brands. And then the third point is the digital transformation of marketing and merchandising. And Clerk or Grocery TV really hits the nail kind of on all of those themes. And so, you know, when we met Marlo and the team, it was kind of a no-brainer as far as where we thought the future was and where they were today.
So staying with you, Roger, on that, like, what advice would you have for traditional grocers? Maybe it's one of the independents or somebody that's facing this sort of the competition from Amazon, this accelerating digital transformation when, you know, their world was very much brick and mortar. And as we talked about before, pen and paper.
Well, I think, you know, you've got to realize that grocery chains are not high margin businesses, as alluded to earlier. So while you do need to try new things, there isn't huge room for error in experimentation if you aren't a national or large multi-state chain. And so you do, you know, piece of advice would be, you know, you've got to find partners to help bring you and to help you watch out for traps, you know, making sure that tech is proven, that implementations are solid. Often in this market, especially, better capitalized doesn't equal ready for prime time. And so the consideration around post-pilot deployment history, live capabilities is important. And so, you know, if the words, you know, robotics and AI are in a sales pitch, realize that these aren't always silver bullet solutions, right? They're exciting, but often they still need some time to improve in order to deliver value. And so, you know, all of these things, I think, are what these traditional grocers are facing at the moment.
Absolutely. And Marlo, on your side, can you talk about maybe the merchandising piece a bit of your business and maybe introduce it a little? And then also, do you anticipate further integration of technologies like that across throughout the grocery store?
As I mentioned before, our displays, grocery TV, are dual purpose. So they can track out of stocks at the checkout and the checkout aisle using cameras. And so the software behind that is basically analyzing an image, comparing against the planogram that's expected for that area, like what products are supposed to be on those shelves, and then outputting different insights that are important to the retailer. So is it out of stock? Is the right product in the right place? All that kind of stuff. So we basically took that software that we've been doing with all of our retail partners that we're already in, and we've started offering that to manufacturers, brands that want to analyze that kind of same data from their field teams. So we actually just announced a partnership with Meredith, which is the largest magazine publisher in the US. And we're now going to be working with them and their field teams. Whenever they go into stores, basically they can take a picture of a fixture where the magazines are at, send that to our system. We can analyze that against what's expected in that store, and then basically give Meredith kind of this overall source of truth for all of US retail that says, here's how you're performing in different markets and different retail chains with different distribution partners. You know, so they actually know, like, you know, what the reality is, because it's really hard to find, you know, even just what my out of stock rate is. And then, yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to expand that concept to other categories beyond just the front of the store. So we're already starting to explore that, as well as looking at, you know, not just am I in stock, but, you know, should I have this product here? Because to date, there hasn't been as much intelligence behind that. It's usually more of like a national plan or a regional plan. We're really excited about the idea of being able to be more adaptive to local communities and swap different product mixes out more, you know, with a higher turnover. So,
yeah, I love it. So this is actually a question from the crowd. So Marlo, in the first panel, Lauren and Roger just alluded to it too, pointing out the challenges for retailers where the margins are so tight, right? So how do you persuade a retailer to invest in your service, whether it's grocery TV or the other parts of your business? And I know you just alluded to it too, but the financial sort of justification for them.
Fortunately, it's pretty easy for the retailer. There's no cost to them for grocery TV, at least. So we actually monetize that with the brands that are paying for content. In fact, it's actually a revenue stream for retailers. So they're getting ad royalty from any content that runs on there that the brands are putting up. So really, the retailers are our partners. We're trying to deliver additional revenue to them. We're trying to lift sales for them. So it's an immediate ROI in that sense. But yeah.
It's great. This one, I think I'll throw at you, Roger. It's a tough one. So you can throw it back to me if you want. But it's a question from the crowd. So how are you guys learning from emerging markets and other geographies to develop and design, you know, sort of the go-to-market businesses, knowing that in many cases, some of the international cities seem to be ahead of the U.S. industry from a grocery standpoint?
That's a very good question. To be honest, we don't invest internationally. And so I don't have a ton of much of an informed opinion on that. But what I would say just in general, as we're thinking about go-to-market and as we're thinking about, you know, what we would invest in, the market timing for grocery tech is really important. And I think it's unique to, you know, each market. There's been a mixed history with grocery tech startups, you know, pilots, you know, often not converting, demand hasn't always been there. And part of it is just the needs of the independent grocers are not met, right? And so I do think it's a very much localized, you know, regional type of strategy that you end up having to develop. Although, you know, of course, there are best practices you can pick up from other markets. But in my industry in particular, with venture capital, something to be aware of is that I think the typical Silicon Valley playbook of spending your way into market share often doesn't work in this market, you know, because you do have to truly understand what that grocery chain in middle America is dealing with, right? And so for me, I'm looking for a true understanding of the needs of the particular market. And if there's learnings from adjacencies or other regions, great. But we've got to have a true understanding of, like, the buyer in grocery.
I love that.
I think one thing that's kind of interesting about the US versus other markets is especially over in Europe, there's a lot more consolidation in the grocery space. So it is actually a little bit different how you approach the market. Like you almost have to work with those larger players from the beginning. Whereas here, like the independent retailers, I mean, it's a huge portion of grocery retail. And then if you include regional players in that, I mean, it's actually the majority. So even factoring for Walmart and stuff like that. So the benefit to us is that we've been able to start really small. You know, our first install was 20 stores and work with chains kind of that scale, like 5 to 50 stores, and then kind of work up that long tail. We are now going into, you know, 100, 200, 300 store chains, but we still get tons and tons of partners join our network that are mom and pop independents that just are excited about the capabilities. And so that makes it a little bit healthier in terms of how you go to market rather than having to be reliant on like one partner that kind of controls you. And it can be a healthier, you know, relationship.
Yeah, that's awesome. We did an event with a whole bunch of Irish food startups yesterday, and it was really interesting. They mentioned that sort of dichotomy of, you know, in the UK, that it is, you know, there's only one or two big chains and like you're either in or out. And coming here and just trying to navigate the thousands of different opportunities and how do you make sense of which one's real and what is that? So just thinking about it from the brand side. And Marla, there's a couple questions that have come in here that are around grocery TV specifically. So thinking about how do you determine the type of content and the value response of that content?
Yeah, so that's always a conversation with every retailer we talk to because they're going to have different preferences for what they want in their stores. A big part of the ad loop that we run is just the retailer's content. So that might be advertising their private label products. That could be local stuff going on in their community that they want to promote. Could just be basic branding or messaging like last year on COVID and how they're keeping the store clean and safe. And then beyond that, for the paid content, you know, the obvious stuff would be any product sold in store. So, you know, we see on average a 13% sales lift for brands that are running on there. So it's a pretty easy win for everybody. But sometimes they might have certain categories they want to carve out. So we'll put that into our content policy. We do actually surprisingly do a lot of non-endemic advertising. So you think like Chase Bank or Geico Insurance or Spotify. They're all people that are actually really interested in the consumers that are coming to grocery retail because, you know, it's the decision maker in the household. It's a high dwell time environment. It's a trusted environment. So there's a lot of interest from those advertisers and a lot of our retail partners are more than happy to have some additional profit from it. But again, that's a conversation with every retailer. And then in terms of the value or the response to the content from the consumer, you know, we're looking at sales lift studies typically if it's an in-store product. But we also look at stuff like perceived dwell time. So does the wait in line feel a little bit shorter and by extension, you're a little bit happier when you leave? And that is something that we see typically, but.
Great. Well, I'll get you both out of here on this. The subject of this is what's next now, right? So Roger, what are you excited about in the grocery space? We talked about a lot of the challenges. Are there places that you look at and go, boy, that's a white space or something that you think is coming in the sort of near future?
Yeah. Well, 2 years ago, if you asked me, you know, I would have said a number of things that are here now. And so, you know, COVID accelerated this move to the future by several years, including the adoption of curbside and delivery and mobile apps and all of these things that were mentioned previously. And, you know, thinking about what you can now do with that engaged user and that person who's comfortable with new tech adoption, who's curious about innovation. And there's a lot of experimentation happening right now with, in my opinion, no clear winner yet. But I think, you know, if you're a grocery chain, you do have to watch these trends and follow suit or risk being left behind. And so in general, we're looking for ideas and excited about opportunities that are empowering the independent grocer to play catch up, to continue to think about their, you know, consumer appeal and consumer touch points.
I love it. And Marlo, you're as deep into this space as you could be. What do you see coming next? What are you most excited about?
Yeah, I mean, just to dovetail over what Roger said with helping independents and regional retailers catch up. I mean, I actually think that we're in a really unique opportunity in that they can not only catch up to people like Walmart and Amazon that have invested in technology heavily, but potentially even actually pass them. Because if you look at them from an organizational standpoint, they're a lot more able to, you know, make decisions quickly, try new things. They're not nearly as bureaucratic. You know, a lot of times I'm talking to, you know, top level people at these retail chains, maybe even the owner. And so as long as there's that willingness to try stuff, I mean, I think they can actually move really, really fast and experiment in ways that if you're a larger retailer, you're going to have a harder time doing because of just the inherent bureaucracy of being a large company. In terms of specific technologies that I get excited about, I mean, obviously we have displays at the checkout, but that's just the beginning. We're already looking at displays in other parts of the store. So as was mentioned on the last panel, like we're seeing more and more of this move from analog print, you know, media to digital media. So we're really trying to build that just generalized retail network. And some of that we're doing by partnering with existing digital networks and basically hooking them into our platform. But then we're also building our own hardware for other parts of the store. And then on the merchandising side, I mean, I think the obvious win is just to know, like, are my products available? And so we're trying to help support that. So basically, I'm marketing it and making sure it's available once someone wants it. And then again, as I hinted earlier, I think once you've got that source of truth, you can start doing even more interesting things like what product should go where and all those kind of questions.
I think overall, it's such an interesting space in that it's the heart of the community, right? Everyone loves their grocery store. They go to it multiple times a week. I know that we talked during the pandemic, and that still was true, right? That was one of the few places when you went out the door that you went to. And so I think seeing that evolve and keep up with all the technology that's happening is very natural. And I appreciate both of you taking the time to share your wisdom with us on this. And so I also wanted to thank everybody for joining us. We really appreciate you coming out to listen to everybody, and hope everyone has a great day and looking forward to what's next. Thanks, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this live broadcast, please go to LinkedIn and look up at Venture Fuel. That's where we post all sorts of information on upcoming events and insights from the conversations we have with venture capitalists, emerging startups, as well as corporate innovators. So again, it's Venture Fuel on LinkedIn. We hope you enjoyed, and until next time.